I think I should go find... I reach for the door handle. Sure, I'm being terribly rude, but not able to stand the air in here. The smell of liquor and cigars. The senator sighs, nods as I grip the handle.
Oh, you too, huh?
He leans back against the desk, looking defeated. I start to open the door, but it's the same lost look on the senator's face as the one Stuart had when he showed up on my parents' porch. I feel like I have no choice but to ask. Me too what, sir? The senator looks over at the picture of Mrs. Whitworth, huge and cold, mounted on his office wall like a warning.
I see it is all, in your eyes.
He chuckles bitterly.
And here I was hoping you might be the one who halfway liked the old man. I mean, if you ever joined this old family.
I look at him now, tingling from his words. Joined this old family. I don't dislike you, sir, I say, shifting in my flats.
I don't mean to bury you in our troubles, but things have been pretty hard here, Eugenia. We were worried sick after all that mess last year. With the other one.
He shakes his head, looks down at the glass in his hand.
Stuart, he just up and left his apartment in Jackson, moved everything out to the camp house in Vicksburg.
I know he was very upset, I say, when truthfully I know almost nothing at all.
Dad's more like it. Hell, I'd drive out to see him, and he'd just be sitting there in front of the window, cracking pecans. Wasn't even eating them. Just pulling off the shell, tossing them in the trash. Wouldn't talk to me or his mama for months.
He crumples in on himself, this gigantic bull of a man. And I want to escape and reassure him at the same time. He looks so pathetic. But then he looks up at me with his bloodshot eyes, says,
Seems like 10 minutes ago I was showing him how to load his first rifle. Ring his first dove bird. But ever since the thing with that girl, he's different. He won't tell me anything.
I just want to know, is my son all right? I think he is, but honestly, I don't really know. I look away. Inside, I'm starting to realize that I don't know Stuart. If this damaged him so much, and he can't even speak to me about it, then what am I to him? Just a diversion? Something sitting beside him to keep him from thinking about what's really tearing him up inside? I look at the senator, try to think of something comforting, something my mother would say. But it's just a dead silence.
Francine would have my hide if she knew I was asking you this.
It's all right, sir, I say. I don't mind that you did. He looks exhausted by it all, tries to smile.
Thank you, darling. Go on and see my son. I'll see y'all out there in a while.
I escape to the back porch and stand next to Stuart. Lightning bursts in the sky, giving us a flash of the eerily brilliant gardens. Then the darkness sucks it all back in. The gazebo, skeleton-like, looms at the end of the garden path. I feel nauseous from the glass of sherry I drank after supper. The senator comes out, looking curiously more sober, in a fresh shirt, plaid and pressed, exactly the same as the last one. Mother and Mrs. Whitworth stroll a few steps, pointing at some rare rose winding its neck up onto the porch. Stuart puts his hand on my shoulder. He is somehow better, but I'm growing worse. Can we... I point inside and Stuart follows me inside. I stop in the hallway with a secret staircase. There's a lot I don't know about you, Stuart, I say. He points to the wall of pictures behind me, the empty space included.
Well, here it all is.
Stuart, your daddy, he told me... I try to find a way to put it. He narrows his eyes at me.
Told you what?
How bad it was. How hard it was on you, I say. With Patricia.
He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know who it was, or what it was about, or...
He leans back against the wall and crosses his arms, and I see that old anger again, deep and red. He is wrapped in it. Stuart, you don't have to tell me now, but sometime we're going to have to talk about this. I'm surprised by how confident I sound, when I certainly don't feel it. He looks me deep in the eyes, shrugs.
She slept with someone else. There.
Someone you know?
No one knew him. He was one of those leeches, hanging around the school, cornering the teachers to do something about the integration laws. Well, she did something all right.
You mean he was an activist? With the civil rights?
That's it, now you know.
Was he colored?
I gulp at the thought of the consequences, because even to me, that would be horrific, disastrous.
No, he wasn't colored. He was scum. Some Yankee from New York, the kind you see on the TV with the long hair and the peace signs.
I'm searching my head for the right question to ask, but I can't think of anything.
You know the really crazy part, Skeeter? I could have gotten over it. I could have forgiven her. She asked me to, told me how sorry she was. But I knew, if it ever got out who he was, that Senator Whitworth's daughter-in-law got in bed with a Yankee goddamn activist, it would ruin him. Kill his career like that.
He snaps his fingers with a crack.
But your father at the table, he said he thought Ross Barnett was wrong.
You know that's not the way it works. It doesn't matter what he believes. It's what Mississippi believes. He's running for the U.S. Senate this fall, and I'm unfortunate enough to know that.
So you broke up with her because of your father?
No, I broke up with her because she cheated.
He looks down at his hands and I can see the shame eating away at him.
But I didn't take her back because of my father.
Stuart, are you still in love with her? I ask, and I try to smile as if it's nothing, just a question. Even though I feel all my blood rushing to my feet. I feel like I will faint asking this. His body slumps some against the gold-patterned wallpaper. His voice softens.
You'd never do that. Lie that way. Not to me. Not to anybody.
He has no idea how many people I'm lying to. But it's not the point. Answer me, Stuart. Are you? He rubs his temples, stretching his hand across his eyes. Hiding his eyes is what I'm thinking.
I think we ought to quit for a while.
He whispers. I reach over to him out of reflex, but he backs away.
I need some time, Skeeter. Space, I guess. I need to go to work and drill oil and get my head straight a while.
I feel my mouth slide open. Out on the porch, I hear the soft calls of our parents. It is time to leave. I walk behind Stuart to the front of the house.
The Whitworths stop in the spiraling foyer while we three Phelans head out the door. In a cottony coma, I listen as everyone pledges to do it again. Out at the Phelans next time. I tell them all goodbye. Thank you. My own voice sounding strange to me. Stuart waves from the steps and smiles at me so our parents can't tell that anything has changed. Chapter 21. We stand in the relaxing room, Mother and Daddy and I, staring at the silver box in the window. It is the size of a truck engine, nosed in knobs, shiny with chrome, gleaming with modern-day hope. Fetters, it reads. Who are these Fetters, anyway? Mother asks. Where are their people from? Go on and turn the crank, Charlotte. Oh, I can't. It's too tacky. Jesus, Mama, Dr. Neal said you need it. Now stand back. My parents glare at me. They do not know Stuart broke up with me after the Whitworth supper, or the relief I long for from this machine, that every minute I feel so hot, so goddamn singed and hurt, I think I might catch on fire. I flip the knob to 1. Overhead, the chandelier bulbs dim. The whir climbs slowly, like it's working its way up a hill. I watch a few tendrils of Mother's hair lift gently into the air. Oh, my! Mother says and closes her eyes. She's been so tired lately and her ulcers are getting worse. Dr. Neal said keeping the house cool would at least make her more comfortable. It's not even on full blast, I say, and I turn it up a notch to 2. The air blows a little harder, grows colder, and we all three smile, our sweat evaporating from our foreheads. Well, heck, let's just go all the way, Daddy says, and turns it up to 3, which is the highest, coldest, most wonderful setting of all, and Mother giggles. We stand with our mouths open like we could eat it. The lights brighten again. The whir grows louder. Our smiles lift higher. And then it all stops dead. Dark. What happened? Mama says. Daddy looks up at the ceiling. He walks out into the hall. Damn, thing blew the current. Mother fans her handkerchief on her neck. Well, good heavens, Carlton, go fix it. For an hour, I hear Daddy and Jameso throwing switches and clanking tools, boots knocking on the porch. After they've fixed it and I sit through a lecture from Daddy to never turn it to 3 again or it will blow the house to pieces, Mother and I watch as an icy mist grows on the windows. Mother dozes in her blue Queen Anne chair, her green blanket pulled to her chest. I wait until she is asleep, listening for the soft snore, the pucker of her forehead. On tiptoe, I turn out all the lamps, the television, every electricity sucker downstairs save the refrigerator. I stand in front of the window and unbutton my blouse. Carefully, I turn the dial to 3, because I long to feel nothing. I want to be frozen inside. I want the icy cold to blow directly on my heart. The power blows out in about 3 seconds. For the next 2 weeks, I submerge myself in the interviews. I keep my typewriter on the back porch and work most of the day long and into the night. The screens give the green yard and fields a hazy look. Sometimes I catch myself staring off at the fields. But I am not here. I am in the old Jackson kitchens with the maids, hot and sticky in their white uniforms. I feel the gentle bodies of white babies breathing against me. I feel what Constantine felt when Mother brought me home from the hospital and handed me over to her. I let their colored memories draw me out of my own miserable life. Skeeter, we haven't heard from Stuart in weeks,
Mother says for the 8th time.
He's not cross with you now, is he?
At the moment, I am writing the Miss Myrna column. Once ahead by 3 months, somehow I've managed to almost miss my deadline. He's fine, Mother. He doesn't have to call every minute of the day. But then I soften my voice. Every day she seems thinner. The sharpness of her collarbone is enough to tamp down my irritation at her comment.
He's just traveling is all, Mama.
This seems to placate her for the moment, and I tell the same story to Elizabeth, with a few more details to Hilly, pinching my arm to bear her insipid smile. But I do not know what to tell myself. Stuart needs space and time, as if this were physics and not a human relationship. So instead of feeling sorry for myself every minute of the day, I work. I type. I sweat. Who knew heartbreak would be so goddamn hot? When Mother's lying down on her bed, I pull my chair up to the air conditioner and stare into it. In July, it becomes a silver shrine. I find Pascagoula pretending to dust with one hand while holding up her hair braids at the thing with the other. It's not as if it's a new invention, air conditioning, but every store in town that has it puts a sign in the window, prints it on its ads because it is so vital. I make a cardboard sign for the Phelan house, place it on the front doorknob. Now air conditioned. Mother smiles, but pretends she's not amused. On a rare evening home, I sit with Mother and Daddy at the dinner table. Mother nibbles on her supper. She spent the afternoon trying to keep me from finding out she'd been vomiting. She presses her fingers along the top of her nose to hold back her headache and says,
I was thinking about the 25th. Do you think that's too soon to have them over?
And I still cannot bring myself to tell her that Stuart and I have broken up. But I can see it on her face, that Mother feels worse than bad tonight. She is pale and trying to sit up longer than I know she wants to. I take her hand and say, Let me check, Mama. I'm sure the 25th will be fine. She smiles for the first time all day. Abilene smiles at the stack of pages on her kitchen table. It's an inch thick, double-spaced, and starting to look like something that can sit on a shelf. Abilene is as exhausted as I am, surely more since she works all day and then comes home to the interviews at night.
Look at that, she says. That thing's almost a book.
I nod, try to smile, but there's so much work left to do. It's nearly August, and even though it's not due until January, we still have 5 more interviews to sort through. With Abilene's help, I've molded and cut and arranged 5 of the women's chapters, including Minnie's, but they still need work. Thankfully, Abilene's section is done. It is 21 pages, beautifully written, simple. There are several dozen made-up names, both white and colored, and at times it is hard to keep them all straight. All along, Abilene has been Sarah Ross. Minnie chose Gertrude Black, for what reason I don't know. I have chosen Anonymous, although Elaine Stein doesn't know this yet. Niceville, Mississippi is the name of our town because it doesn't exist, but we decided a real state name would draw interest, and since Mississippi happens to be the worst, we figured we'd better use it. A breeze blows through the window and the top pages flutter. We both slam our palms down to catch them.
You think she gon' wanna print it?
Asks Abilene.
When it's done?
I try to smile at Abilene, show some false confidence. I hope so, I say as brightly as I can manage. She seemed interested in the idea and she... Well, the march is coming up and... I hear my own voice taper off. I truly don't know if Mrs. Stein will want to print it. But what I do know is, the responsibility of the project lays on my shoulders, and I see it in their hard-working, lined faces, how much the maids want this book to be published. They are scared, looking at the back door every 10 minutes, afraid they'll get caught talking to me, afraid they'll be beaten like Luvinia's grandson, or, hell, bludgeoned in their front yard like Medgar Evers. The risk they're taking is proof they want this to get printed, and they want it bad. I no longer feel protected just because I'm white. I check over my shoulder often when I drive the truck to Abilene's. The cop who stopped me a few months back is my reminder. I am now a threat to every white family in town. Even though so many of the stories are good, celebrating the bonds of women and family, the bad stories will be the ones that catch the white people's attention. They will make their blood boil and their fists swing. We must keep this a perfect secret. I'm deliberately 5 minutes late for the Monday night league meeting, our first in a month. Hilly's been down at the coast, wouldn't dare allow a meeting without her. She's tan and ready to lead. She holds her gavel like a weapon. All around me, women sit and smoke cigarettes, tip them into glass ashtrays on the floor. I chew my nails to keep from smoking one. I haven't smoked in 6 days. Besides the cigarette missing from my hand, I'm jittery from the faces around me. I easily spot 7 women in the room who are related to someone in the book, if not in it themselves. I want to get out of here and get back to work, but 2 long, hot hours pass before Hilly finally bangs her gavel. By then, even she looks tired of hearing her own voice. Girls stand and stretch. Some head out, eager to attend to their husbands. Others dawdle, the ones with a kitchen full of kids and help that has gone home. I gather my things quickly, hoping to avoid talking to anyone, especially Hilly. But before I can escape, Elizabeth catches my eye, waves me over. I haven't seen her for weeks, and I can't avoid speaking to her. I feel guilty that I haven't been to see her. She grabs the back of her chair and raises herself up. She is 6 months pregnant, woozy from the pregnancy tranquilizers. "How are you feeling?" I ask. Everything on her body is the same, except her stomach is huge and swollen. "Is it any better this time?" "God, no, it's awful, and I still have 3 months to go." We're both quiet. Elizabeth burps faintly, looks at her watch. Finally, she picks up her bag, about to leave, but then she takes my hand. "I heard," she whispers, "about you and Stuart. I'm so sorry." I look down. I'm not surprised she knows. Only that it took this long for anyone to find out. I haven't told anyone, but I guess Stuart has. Just this morning I had to lie to Mother and tell her the Whitworths would be out of town on the 25th. Mother's so-called date to have them over. "I'm sorry I didn't tell you," I say. "I don't like talking about it." "I understand. Oh, shoot, I better go on. Raleigh's probably having a fit by himself with her." She gives a last look at Hilly. Hilly smiles and nods her excusal. I gather my notes quickly, head for the door. Before I make it out, I hear her.
"Wait a sec, would you, Skeeter?"
I sigh, turn around, and face Hilly. She's wearing the navy blue sailor number, something you'd dress a 5-year-old in. The pleats around her hips are stretched open like accordion bellows. The room is empty except for us now.
"Can we discuss this, please, ma'am?"
She holds up the most recent newsletter, and I know what's coming.
I can't stay. Mother's sick. "I told you 5 months ago to print my initiative, and now another week has passed, and you still haven't followed my instructions."
I stare at her, and my anger is sudden, ferocious. Everything I've kept down for months rises and erupts in my throat. "I will not print that initiative." She looks at me, holding very still.
"I Won't that initiative in the newsletter before election time?
She says and points to the ceiling.
Or I'm calling upstairs, Missy.
If you try to throw me out of the league, I will dial up Genevieve von Habsburg in New York City myself, I hiss, because I happen to know Genevieve's Hilly's hero. She's the youngest National League president in history, perhaps the only person in this world Hilly's afraid of. But Hilly doesn't even flinch.
And tell her what, Skeeter? Tell her you're not doing your job? Tell her you're carrying around Negro activist materials?
I'm too angry to let this unnerve me. I want them back, Hilly. You took them and they don't belong to you.
Of course I took them. You have no business carrying around something like that. What if somebody saw those things?
Who are you to say what I can and cannot carry?
It is my job, Skeeter. You know well as I do, people won't buy so much as a slice of pound cake from an organization that harbors racial integrationists.
Hilly, I just need to hear her say it. Just who is all that pound cake money being raised for, anyway? She rolls her eyes.
The poor, starving children of Africa?
I wait for her to catch the irony of this, that she'll send money to colored people overseas, but not across town. But I get a better idea. I'm gonna call up Genevieve right now. I'm going to tell her what a hypocrite you are. Hilly straightens. I think for a second I've tapped a crack in her shell with those words. But then she licks her lips, takes a deep, noisy sniff.
You know, it's no wonder Stuart Whitworth dropped you.
I keep my jaw clenched so that she cannot see the effect these words have on me. But inside, I am a slow, sliding scale. I feel everything inside of me slipping down into the floor. I want those laws back, I say, my voice shaking.
Then print the initiative.
I turn and walk out the door. I heave my satchel into the Cadillac and light a cigarette. Mother's light is off when I get home, and I'm grateful. I tiptoe down the hall onto the back porch, easing the squeaky screen door closed. I sit down at my typewriter. But I cannot type. I stare at the tiny gray squares of the back porch screen. I stare so hard, I slip through them. I feel something inside me crack open then. I'm vaporous. I am crazy. I am deaf to that stupid silent phone. Deaf to Mother's retching in the house. Her voice through the window.
I'm fine, Carlton. It's past.
I hear it all, and yet I hear nothing. Just a high buzzing in my ears. I reach in my satchel and pull out the page of Hilly's bathroom initiative. The paper is limp, already damp with humidity. A moth lands in the corner, then flutters away, leaving a brown smudge of wing chalk. With slow, deliberate strokes, I start typing the newsletter. Sarah Shelby to marry Robert Pryor. Please attend a baby clothes showing by Mary Catherine Simpson. A tea in honor of our loyal sustainers. Then I type Hilly's initiative. I place it on the second page, opposite the photo ops. This is where everyone will be sure to see it, after they look at themselves at the summer fun jamboree. All I can think while I'm typing is, what would Constantine think of me?
Aveline, Chapter 22. How old are you today, big girl? May Mobley still in bed. She hold out two sleepy fingers and say, May Mo 2. Nuh-uh, we 3 today. I move up one of her fingers, chant what my daddy used to say to me on my birthdays. Three little soldiers come out the door, two say stop, one say go. She in a big girl bed now since the nursery getting fixed up for the new baby. Next year we do four little soldiers. They looking for something to eat. Her nose wrinkled up because now she got to remember to say she made Mobley three. When her whole life she can remember, she'd been telling people she made Mobley two. When you're little, you only get asked two questions. What's your name and how old you is? So you better get them right.
I'm Mae Mobley, three, she say.
She scramble out of bed, her hair in a rat's nest. That bald spot she had as a baby is coming back. Usually I can brush over it and hide it for a few minutes, but not for long. It's thin, and she's losing them curls. It gets real stringy by the end of the day. It don't trouble me that she ain't cute, but I try to fix her up nice as I can for her mama. Come on to the kitchen, I say. We gonna make you a birthday breakfast. Miss Lee fought off getting her hair done. She don't care about being there on the morning her only child wakes up on the first birthday she remember. But at least Miss Lee folk got her what she want. Brung me back to her bedroom and point to a big box on the floor.
Won't she be happy? Miss Lee folk say. It walks and talks and even cries.
Sure enough, there's a big pink polka dot box. Got cellophane across the front. And inside, there's the doll baby tall as Mae Mobley, named Allison. She got blonde curly hair and blue eyes, frilly pink dress on. Every time the commercial come on the TV, Mae Mobley run over to the set and grab the box on both sides, put her face up to the screen and stare so serious. Miss Lee folk looked like she gonna cry herself looking down at that toy. I reckon her mean old mama never got her what she wanted when she little. In the kitchen, I fix some grits without no seasoning and put them baby marshmallows on top. I toast the whole thing to make it a little crunchy. Then I garnish it with a cut-up strawberry. That's all a grit is, a vehicle, for whatever it is you'd rather be eating. The three little pink candles I done brought from home is in my pocketbook. I bring them out, undo the wax paper I got them in so they don't turn out bent. After I light them, I bring them grits over to her booster chair at the white linoleum table in the middle of the room. I say, "Happy birthday, Mae Mobley, too." She laugh and say, "I am Mae Mobley, three." "You sure is. Now blow out them candles, baby girl, before they run up in your grits." She stare at the little flame, smiling. "Blow it, big girl." She blow 'em clean over. She suck the grits off the candles and start eating. After a while, she smile up at me, say,
"How old are you?"
"Aveline's 53. Her eyes get real wide. I might as well be 1,000.
"Do you get birthdays?"
"Yeah," I laugh. "It's a pity, but I do. My birthday be next week. I can't believe I'm gonna be 54 years old. Where do it go?"
"Do you have some babies?"
she asked. I laugh. "I got 17 of them." She ain't quite got up to 17 in her numbers yet, but she know this be a big one. "That's enough to fill up this whole kitchen," I say. Her brown eyes are so big and round.
"Where are the babies?"
"They all over town. All the babies I done looked after."
"Why don't they come play with me?"
"'Cause most of them grown. A lot of them already having babies of their own." Lordy, she looked confused. She doing her figuring, like she be trying to count it all up. Finally, I say, "You one of them, too. All the babies I tend to, I count as my own." She nod, cross up her arms. I start washing the dishes. The birthday party tonight just gonna be the family, and I got to get the cakes made. First, I'm gonna do the strawberry one with the strawberry icing. Every meal be strawberry if it was up to Mae Mobley. Then I do the other one. "Let's do a chocolate cake," say Miss Leafault yesterday. She's 7 months pregnant and love eating chocolate. Now, I done planned this last week. I got everything ready. This too important to be occurring to me the day before. Mm-hmm. What about strawberry? That'd be Mae Mobley's favorite, you know. Oh, no. She wants chocolate. I'm going to the store today and get everything you need. Chocolate my foot. So I figured I'd just go on and make both. At least then she'd get to blow out 2 sets of candles. I cleaned up the grits plate, give her some grape juice to drink. She got her old baby doll in the kitchen, the one she called Claudia, with the painted-on hair and eyes that close. Make a pitiful whining sound when you drop it on the floor. There's your baby, I say, and she pats its back like she burping it, nods. Then she say, Aby, you're my real mama. She don't even look at me. Just say it like she talking about the weather. I kneel down on the floor where she playing. Your mama's off getting her hair fixed, baby girl. You know who your mama is. But she shake her head, cuddling that doll to her. I'm your baby, she say. Mae Mobley, you know I was just teasing you about all them 17 kids being mine. They ain't really. I only had me one child. I know, she say. I'm your real baby. Those other ones you said are pretend. Now, I had babies be confused before. John Green Dudley, first word out of that boy's mouth was mama, and he was looking straight at me. But then pretty soon he calling everybody, including himself, mama. And calling his daddy mama, too, did that for a long time. Nobody worried about it. Of course, when he start playing dress-up in his sister's Jewel Taylor twirl skirts and wearing Chanel number 5, we all get a little concerned. I looked after the Dudley family for too long, over 6 years. His daddy would take him to the garage and whip him with a rubber hose pipe, trying to beat the girl out of that boy until I couldn't stand it no more. Treloar near about suffocated when I'd come home, I'd hug him so hard. When we started working on the stories, Miss Skeeter asked me, what's the worst day I remember being a maid? I told her it was a stillbirth baby. But it wasn't. It was every day from 1941 to 1947, waiting by the screen door for them beatings to be over. I wish to God I'd told John Green Dudley he ain't going to hell, that he ain't no sideshow freak 'cause he liked boys. I wish to God I'd filled his ears with good things, like I'm trying to do Mae Mobley. Instead, I just sat in the kitchen, waiting to put the salve on them hosepipe welts. Just then we hear Miss Leafolk pulling into the carport. I get a little nervous at what Miss Leafolk gonna do if she hear this mama stuff. Mae Mobley nervous, too. Her hands start flapping like a chicken. Shh! Don't tell, she say. She'll spank me. So she already done had this talk with her mama. And Miss Leafolk didn't like it one bit. When Miss Leafolk come in with her new hairdo, Mae Mobley don't even say hello. She run back to her room, like she's scared her mama can hear what's going on inside her head. Mae Mobley's birthday party goes fine. At least that's what Miss Leafolk tell me the next day. Friday morning I come in to see 3/4 of a chocolate cake setting on the counter. Strawberry all gone. That afternoon, Miss Skeeter come by to give Miss Leafolk some papers. Soon as Miss Leafolk waddle off to the bathroom, Miss Skeeter slip in the kitchen. We on for tonight? I ask. We're on. I'll be there. Miss Skeeter don't smile much since Mr. Stewart and her ain't steady no more. I heard Miss Hilly and Miss Leafolk talking about it plenty. Miss Skeeter get herself a Coca-Cola from the icebox, speak in a low voice. Tonight we'll finish Winnie's interview, and this weekend I'll start sorting it all out. But then I can't meet again till next Thursday. I promised Mama I'd drive her to Natchez Monday for a DAR thing. Miss Skeeter kind of narrow her eyes up, Something she do when she's thinking about something important. I'll be gone for 3 days, okay? Good, I say. You need you a break. She head toward the dining room, but she look back, say, Remember, I leave Monday morning, and I'll be gone for 3 days, okay? Yes, ma'am, I say, wondering why she thinks she got to say this twice. It ain't but 8:30 on Monday morning, but Miss Leafolt's phone already ringing its head off. Miss Leafolt put Elizabeth on the phone. I go tell Miss Leafolt. She get out of bed, shuffle in the kitchen in her roll as a nightgown, pick up the receiver. Miss Hilly sound like she using a megaphone, not a telephone. I can hear every word. Have you been by my house? What? What are you talking? She put it in the newsletter about the toilets. I specifically said old coats are to be dropped off at my house, not... Let me get my mail. I don't know what you're... When I find her, I will kill her myself. The line crashed down in Miss Leafolt's ear. She stand there a second staring at it, then throw a house coat over her nightgown. I've got to go, she says, scrambling around for her keys. I'll be back. She run all pregnant out the door and tumble in her car and speed off. I look down at Mae Mobley and she look up at me. Don't ask me, baby girl, I don't know either. What I do know is, Hilly and her family drove in this morning from a weekend in Memphis. Whenever Miss Hilly gone, that's all Miss Leafolt talk about is where she is and when she coming back. Come on, baby girl, I say after a while, let's take a walk, find out what's going on. We walk up Divine, turn left, and up Miss Hilly Street, which is Myrtle. Even though it's August, it's a nice walk, ain't too hot yet. Birds is zipping around, singing. Mae Mobley holding my hand, and we swinging our arms, having a good old time. Lots of cars passing us today, which is strange, 'cause Myrtle a dead end. We turn the bend to Miss Hilly's great big white house, and there they is. Mae Mobley point and laugh. Look, look, Evie! I have never in my life seen a thing like this. 3 dozen of them. Pots. Right smack on Miss Hilly's lawn. All different colors and shapes and sizes. Some is blue, some is pink, some is white. Some ain't got no ring, some ain't got no tank. There's old ones, young ones, chain on top and flush with the handle. Almost look like a crowd of people the way some got their lids open, talking. Some with their lids closed, listening. We move over into the drain ditch, 'cause the traffic on this little street starting to build up. People is driving down, circling around the little island of grass at the end with their windows down, laughing out loud, saying, Look at Hilly's house, look at those things. Staring at them toilets like they never seen one before. 1, 2, 3. Mae Mobley start counting them. She get to 12 and I got to take over. 29, 30, 31, 32 commodes, baby girl. We get a little closer, and now I see they ain't just all over the yard. There's two in the driveway, side by side, like they a couple. There's one up on the front step, like it's waiting for Miss Hilly to answer the door. Ain't that one funny with the... But baby girl done broke off from my hand. She running in the yard and get to the pink pot in the middle and pull up the lid. Before I know it, she done pulled on her panties and tinkled in it, and I'm chasing after her with half a dozen horns honking and a man in a hat taking pictures. Miss Leafolt's car's in the drive behind Miss Hilly's, but they ain't in sight. They must be inside yelling about what they gonna do with this mess. Curtains is drawn, and I don't see no stirring. I cross my fingers, hope they didn't catch baby girl making potty for half of Jackson to see. It's time to go on back. The whole way home, baby girl is asking questions about them pots. Why they there? Where they come from? Can she go see Heather and play with them toilets some more? When I get back to Miss Leafolt's, the phone rings off the hook the rest of the morning. I don't answer it. I'm waiting for it to stop long enough so I can call Minnie. But when Miss Leafolt slam into the kitchen, she get to yapping on the phone a million miles an hour, Don't take me long to get the story pieced together listening to her. Miss Skeeter done printed Hilly's toilet announcement in the newsletter, all right. The list of them reasons why white folk and color folk can't be sharing a seat. And then below that, she followed with the alert about the coat drive, too. Or at least that's what she was supposed to do. Instead of coats, though, it says something like, drop off your old toilets at 228 Myrtle Street. We'll be out of town, but leave them in by the front door. She just get one word mixed up, that's all. I expect that's what she gonna say anyway. Too bad for Miss Hilly there wasn't no other news going on. Nothing on Vietnam or the draft. They already say all they can about the church blown up in Alabama, killing those poor colored girls. Next day, Miss Hilly's house with all them pots makes the front page of the Jackson Journal. I got to say, it is a funny-looking sight. I just wish it was in color, so you could compare all them shades of pink and blue and white. Desegregation of the toilet bowls is what they should have called it. The headlines say, come on by, have a seat. There ain't no article to go with it, just the picture and a little caption saying, the home of Hilly and William Holbrook of Jackson, Mississippi was a sight to see this morning. And I don't mean nothing going on just in Jackson. I mean nothing in the entire United States. Lottie Freeman, who work at the governor's mansion where they get all the big papers, told me she saw it in the living section of the New York Times. And in every one of them it read, home of Hilly and William Holbrook, Jackson, Mississippi. At Miss Leifold's, there's lots of extra talking on the telephone that week. Lot of head nodding like Miss Leifold getting an earful from Miss Hilly. Part of me want to laugh about them pots. Another part want to cry. It was an awful big risk for Miss Skeeter to take, turning Miss Hilly against her. She coming home tonight from Natchez, and I hope she called. I reckon now I know why she went. On Thursday morning, I still ain't heard from Miss Skeeter. I set up my ironing in the living room. Miss Leifold come home with Miss Hilly, and they sat at the dining room table. I ain't seen Miss Hilly over here since before the pots. I reckon she ain't leaving the house so much. I turn the TV set down low, keep my ear tuned up. Here it is. Here's what I told you about. Miss Hilly got a little booklet opened up. She running a finger along the lines. Miss Leifold shaking her head. You know what this means, don't you? She wants to change these laws. Why else would she be carrying them around? I can't believe this, say Miss Leifold. I can't prove she put those pots in my yard, but this, she holds up the book and taps it. This is solid proof she is up to something, and I intend to tell Stuart Whitworth, too.
But they're not steady anymore.
Well, he still needs to know, in case he has any inclination of patching things up with her, for the sake of Senator Whitworth's career.
But maybe it really was a mistake, the newsletter. Maybe she...
Elizabeth. Hilly crossed her arms up. I'm not talking about pots. I am talking about the laws of this great state. Now I want you to ask yourself, do you want Mae Mobley sitting next to a colored boy in English class?
Miss Hilly glanced back at me doing my ironing. She lowered her voice, but Miss Hilly never knew how to whisper good.
Do you want Negro people living right here in this neighborhood? Touching your bottom when you pass on the street?
I look up and see it starting to sink in on Miss Leifold. She straightened up all prim and proper.
William had a fit when he saw what she did to our house, and I can't soil my name hanging around her anymore, not with the election coming up. I've already asked Jeannie Caldwell to take Skeeter's place in Bridge Club.
You kicked her out of Bridge Club?
I sure did, and I thought about kicking her out of the league, too.
Can you even do that?
Of course I can, but I've decided I want her to sit in that room and see what a fool she's made of herself. Miss Hilly nods. She needs to learn that she can't carry on this way. I mean, around us, it's one thing, but around some other people, she is going to get in big trouble.
It's true. There are some racists in this town, Miss Leifold say.
Miss Hilly nodded her head. Oh, they're out there. After a while, they get up and drive off together. I'm glad I don't have to see their faces for a while. At noontime, Mr. Leafolk come home for lunch, which is rare. He sat down at the little breakfast table. Abilene, make me up some lunch, would you please? He lift the newspaper, pop the spine to get it straight. I'll have some roast beef. Yes, sir. I set down a placemat and a napkin and some silverware for him. He tall and real thin. Won't be too long before he all bald. Got a black ring around his head and nothing on top. You staying on to help Elizabeth with the new baby? He asked, reading his paper. Generally, he don't ever pay me no mind. Yes, sir, I say. Because I hear you like to move around a lot. Yes, sir, I say. It's true. Most maids stay with the same family all their lives, but not me. I got my own reasons for moving on when they about 8, 9 years old. Took me a few jobs to learn that. I work best with the babies.
So you don't really consider yourself a maid. You're more of a nurse type for the children.
He puts his paper down, looks at me.
You're a specialist, like me.
I don't say nothing, just nod a little.
See, I only do taxes for businesses, not every individual that's filing a tax return.
I'm getting nervous. This is the most he ever talked to me, and I've been here 3 years.
Must be hard finding a new job every time the kids get old enough for school.
Something always come along. He don't say nothing to that, so I go ahead and get the roast out.
Gotta keep up good references, moving around a different clientele like you do.
Yes, sir.
I hear you know Skeeter Phelan, old friend of Elizabeth's.
I keep my head down. Real slow I get to slicing, slicing, slicing the meat off that loin. My heart's pumping triple speed now. She asked me for cleaning tips sometimes for the article.
That right, Mr. Leafold say.
Yes, so she just asked me for tips.
I don't want you talking to that woman anymore. Not for cleaning tips, not to say hello, you hear?
Yes, sir.
I hear about you two talking and you'll be in a heap of trouble, you understand?
Yes, sir. I whisper, wondering what this man know. Mr. Leafolk pick up his newspaper again.
I had that meat in a sandwich, put a little mayonnaise on it, and not too toasted. I don't want it dry now.
That night, me and Minnie sitting at my kitchen table. My hands started shaking this afternoon and ain't quit since.
That ugly white fool, Minnie say.
I just wish I knew what he thinking. There's a knock on the back door and Minnie and me both look at each other. Only one person knock on my door like that. Everybody else just come on in. I open it and there's Miss Skeeter. Minnie here, I whisper, cause it always safer to know when you gonna walk in a room with Minnie. I'm glad she here. I got so much to tell her I don't even know where to start. But I'm surprised to see Miss Skeeter got something close to a smile on her face. I guess she ain't talked to Miss Hilly yet. Hello, Minnie, she say when she step inside. Minnie look over at the window. Hello, Miss Skeeter. Before I can get a word in, Miss Skeeter sat down and start right in. I had some ideas while I was away, Abilene. I think we should lead with your chapter first. She pulled some papers out of that tacky red satchel. And then Luvinia's. We'll switch with Faye Bell's story since we don't want 3 dramatic stories in a row. The middle we'll sort out later, but Minnie, I think your section should definitely come last.
Miss Skeeter, I got some things to tell you, I say. Minnie and me look at each other.
I'm gonna go, Minnie say, frowning like her chair gotten too hard to sit in. She head for the door, but on her way out she give Miss Skeeter a touch on the shoulder real quick, keep her eyes straight like she ain't done it. Then she gone. You've been out of town a while, Miss Skeeter. I rub the back of my neck. Then I tell her that Miss Hilly pulled that booklet out and showed it to Miss Leafolt, and law knows who else she passing around town to now. Miss Skeeter nod, say,
I can handle Hilly. This doesn't implicate you or the other maids or the book at all. And then I tell her what Mr. Leafold say, how he real clear that I ain't to talk to her no more about the cleaning article. I don't want to tell her these things, but she gonna hear 'em, and I want her to hear 'em from me first. She listened careful, ask a few questions. When I'm done, she say, "He's full of hot air, Raleigh. I'll have to be extra careful, though, when I go over to Elizabeth's. I won't come in the kitchen anymore." And I can tell this ain't really hitting her what's happening. The trouble she in with her friends, how scared we need to be. I tell her what Miss Hilly say about letting her suffer through the league. I tell her she been kicked out of bridge club. I tell her that Miss Hilly gonna tell Mr. Stewart all about it, just in case he get any inclination to mend things with her. Skeeter look away from me, try to smile. I don't care about any of that old stuff anyway. She kind of laugh and it hurts my heart. 'Cause everybody care. Black, white, deep down we all do. I'd rather you hear it from me than in town, I say, so you know what's coming, so you can be real careful. She bite her lip, nod. Thank you, Aveline. Chapter 23. The summer rolls behind us like a hot tar spreader. Every colored person in Jackson gets in front of whatever TV set they can find, watches Martin Luther King stand in our nation's capital, and tell us he's got a dream. I'm in the church basement watching. Our own Reverend Johnson went up there to march, and I find myself scanning the crowd for his face. I can't believe so many peoples is there. 250,000. And the ringer is, 60,000 of them is white. Mississippi and the world is two very different places, the deacon say, and we all nod, 'cause ain't it the truth. We get through August and September, and every time I see Miss Skeeter, she look thinner, a little more skittish in the eyes. She try to smile like it ain't that hard on her that she ain't got no friends left. In October, Miss Hilly sits at Miss Leafold's dining room table. Miss Leafold's so pregnant she can't barely focus her eyes. Meanwhile, Miss Hilly got a big fur around her neck, even though it's 60 degrees outside. She stick her pinky out from her tea glass and say, "Skeeter thought she was so clever, dumping all those toilets in my front yard. Well, they're working out just fine. We've already installed 3 of them in people's garages and sheds. Even William said it was a blessing in disguise." I ain't gonna tell Miss Skeeter this, that she ended up supporting the cause she fighting against. But then I see it don't matter, 'cause Miss Hilly say, "I decided I'd write Skeeter a thank you note last night. Told her how she's helped move the project along faster than it ever would have gone." With Miss Leafold so busy making clothes for the new baby, May Mobley and me spend pretty much every minute of the day together. She getting too big for me to carry her all the time. Or maybe I'm too big. I try and give her a lot of good squeezes instead.
"Come tell me my secret story," she whisper, smiling so big. She always want her secret story now, first thing when I get in. The secret stories are the ones I be making up. But then Miss Leafold come in with her purse on her arm, ready to leave. "May Mobley, I'm leaving now. Come give Mama a big hug." But May Mobley don't move. Miss Leafold, she got a hand on her hip waiting for her sugar. "Go on, May Mobley," I whisper. I nudge her and she go hug her mama real hard, kind of desperate-like. But Miss Leafold, she already looking in her purse for her keys, kind of wiggle off. It don't seem to bother May Mobley so much, though, like it used to. And that's what I can't hardly look at.
"Come on, A.B.,"
May Mobley say to me after her mama gone.
"Time for my secret story."
We go on in her room where we like to sit. I get up in the big chair, and she get up on me and smile and bounce a little. Tell me. Tell me about the brown wrapping and the present.
She's so excited, she's squirming.